This interview was made February 11, 1972. Mr. Ernie Shassy of Madawaska, Maine, a prominent farmer along the St. John River, has consented to fill in the agricultural part of this tape for us. Ernie owns and operates an 1,100-acre farm in St. David, Maine. The homestead is one of the original 21 land grant 200 acres made in 1790 to the first French settlers along the St. John River. On the flat behind the Shassy homestead is a white cross and bronze marker in commemoration of the arrival of the Acadians in 1785. I take it then, Ernie, that you are the sixth or the seventh generation of French descent to be farming this lot, so-called 147, in 1790.
Yes, I believe I am. In 1942, I bought this farm from my dad. But my dad had bought this farm in 1926 from George Peltier, Joseph Peltier's son. And since that time, I bought some of the farms in the town of Madawaska, which amounts to about 1,100 acres of land that I farmed. Out of this 1,100 acres, something like 550 to 560 tillable land. And the crop that I raise is mostly potatoes. The first years of my farming, I copied a little bit what my dad used to plant buckwheat and oats and had cattle. And like anybody else, I started with a team of horses in 1942, which my father owned at the time. And now, of course, well, it's tractors, harvesters that we use. It's modern farming, what might as well call, a lot of people call it modern farming. And
how long have you been on this farm?
Since 1942.
Now, but you were brought up on this farm, though. Did you live in this here before your dad?
I was born in Senegat, Maine, and I lived there for 4 years. I was born in 1910. Then we moved to San David, a farm that my dad had bought from Arthur Daigle. And from this Arthur Daigle's farm, in 1926, my dad bought this Peltier farm. And he farmed it from 26 to 42, and then sold it to me in 42.
But Ernie, what do you remember about the way they farmed then when you were a little boy?
Well, I remember when I was, I used to cultivate the potatoes in the summer with a, which we call a horse-drawn affair with a one-row, I would call it a cultivator. And you'd use one horse, and then they would come back with a team on a hoeing machine. It's all governed by hand, you see. And then later on, of course, the potato deal, my dad bought they call a double row cultivator, hoeing at the same time. It was a combination of both, you see. And from which I had on the farm here when I bought the farm in 42. But when I bought the farm, well, I bought a tractor, and I had that team of horses, and I changed the. The old planter we had at that time, I cut the pole on it and put a hitch for the tractor, and we used a tractor to plant potatoes instead of a team. The reason was at the time that a tractor would make rows a little straighter than the team and much faster. And of course, later on, a couple years later, we bought a machinery-made planter, which was especially for tractors.
What do you mean a machinery-made planter? Do you mean to say that the horse-drawn planter was made at home?
No, I mean it was we had cut a pole on it for the team of horses, just to change it from the for a hitch. You know what I mean? That would the tractor could use a tractor on it. So we never used a team of horses afterward on a planter. We used a team of horses on harrowing the field and some plowing, and the rest was done by the tractor, the planting, cultivating, and hoeing, and harvesting.
Yes. Now, Ernie, do you remember when they used to use oxen for planting?
Yes, I remember. I used to, with one of my little brother, we were on Atadego's farm, we used to plow with a team of horses, hogs. And I remember one time that the train was going by, and when they blew their horn, a team of hogs, you know, started to go sideways in the field, and we had to let go, and they ran, you know, to the road, they stopped, you see. So we had to go back and pick up the plow, what was left of it, and go back in the field again.
And now, what kind of a plow? Did you use the same kind of a plow with the oxen as you did with the horses, or was
Yes, that? Same thing.
And about how old were you, Ernie, when they were driving these oxen?
Well, I was probably about, I would say about 10, 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And I had a brother, one of my brother was with me, because one was steering the hogs and the other one was holding the plow.
Are you seeing hogs or oxen?
Oxen.
And Ernie, what did you wear for clothes? Did you wear shoes when you were out plowing like that?
No. In those days, we didn't have any shoes. We started to wear shoes when, the only time we wear shoes when you're going to school, when you come out of school, you had to remove your shoes to go in the field. And at night, before supper, you had to go get the cows for milking.
And would you tell me the time that your dad sent up on the hill to get the cows for the milking?
Yeah, well, many times he sent us. And some night when they were too far in the field or in the mountains, in the wood, well, we'd come back without the cows, you know, we'd say we saw a deer. And one time Dad said, well, this deer that you saw, does it had a long tail? And we said, yes. And Dad said, it's the first time you ever seen a deer with a long tail.
I take it then you were kind of a fraidy cat, huh? You were,
oh, yes.
Yeah. Didn't quite trust yourself too far away from the... Getting back to farming, Ernie, when your dad had the farm, about how many acres of potatoes did he plant?
Around 20 acres.
20 acres.
From what I can remember.
Yeah.
He was planting 20 acres in 1941. That's what he had planted.
And now, these potatoes, did he dug these with a horse-drawn harvester?
Yeah.
And then where would he store these potatoes?
Well, there was, he had a, in fact, he had two potato houses. He had one on track, what we used to call it, Fournier Siding. And he had a storage under the barn, permanent storage, potato storage under the barn.
And now, how did he convey these potatoes from the field to the storage?
Well, he'd pick them up with basket and then put them in barrels and haul them with a team.
A team of horses? A
team of horses in a wagon. In fact, I loaded, when I got to be strong enough, I was loading barrels out of the field with one of my brother, while Dad was taking care of the field, digging the potatoes.
Did they hire a lot of people for the harvest then?
No, it was mostly kids, and once in a while, when you didn't have anybody old enough, but he'd hire one man to haul the potatoes from the field to the potato house. And we dig probably sometime harvest about 200 barrels in a day, and that was a very good day. See, 150, 200. But the crop never was like it is today. I mean, he planted 20 acres of potatoes would give him a crop of about anywhere from 18 to 2,500 barrels of potatoes. This was an average crop.
Yes. Now that would be about how many barrels to the acre then?
Oh, it would run anywhere from 80 barrels to the acre to 110. See, that was quite a good average. Anybody that had over 100 barrels to the acre was a fairly good average. Mm-hmm. They were almost 100% green mountains at the time, and there was no spraying, hardly any spraying done, except that Dad had what we used to call a duster, and would spray dust in the morning, see, before the dew went out.
You would spray?
Early in the morning, he would go out in the field and start sometime at 4 o'clock and spray until 7 or 8. But as soon as the dew was gone, he stopped that and waited the next day.
What was this dust like? Do you know what chemical it was?
Yeah, well, it was some kind of a, it wasn't a blue vitriol, but there was a name for it anyway. You know what I mean? To keep the potatoes from getting blight. Same as what we do today, but it's different than the material.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember when I was younger, we used to pick mustard in the fields.
Well, we did that too, all summer long.
Mm-hmm. Did you hate it as much as we did?
Well, we sure did.
Now, Ernie, they had potato bugs. How did they treat the potato bugs then?
Well, we used to pick them by hand at first. See, and when they got this dust, well, they were able to buy poison, we call it poison, and apply it with that. See, would kill the potato bugs.
And it had to be put on before the dew went away?
Yeah, because this dust form wouldn't stick to the leaves. If it was dry, it would fall on the ground and it would be lost. And when it was kind of wet, I mean, especially with dew, that the leaf was well wet and it would stick to it.
And how many barrels to the acre do you get now with your modern technology?
Well, that all depends. It varies, but the average in the county now, I mean, especially here along the river, is anywhere from 130 to 200 barrels to the acre. It depends the year and the climate that you have.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the average? What would you consider to be the average acre?
Average per acre?
Yes.
This year I think it's about 150 for an average for all the farmers. My average this year here is 159.
Now, Ernie, you've been planting potatoes now for how many years?
Since 1942 on my own.
1942. Now, have you used your farmland for anything else besides potatoes?
Oh, yes. I planted plant oats almost every year, except this last year we didn't. And the last 2-3 years I've been planting a few acres of buckwheat along with it. And sometime we plant green cover crops in fields, like Japanese millet or crimson clover or this maize. Varieties of green cover that you can plant.
But why do you do that?
Well, to help the soil when it gets depleted enough. I mean, if after you plant the field, for a long time in potatoes, it takes all the nitrogen out of the farm, out of the soil, see. And you got to put some back, so you have to use lime and plow green cover crops under to bring your pH back.
You've been living here in St. David ever since you were 4 years old, and you grew up here. Could you tell me what it was like growing up in St. David when you were a little boy? You started school when you were five?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, where did you go to school?
Well, there used to be a school right on one of the farms I own today. We used to call it Remy Daigle's Farm. And in fact, today where that school is, I got a potato house right where the school was built. This potato house was built by Maxime Sear, Eugene Sear's father. And of course, today, well, I bought the farm, and the potato house was on there. It was built by them.
Yes. Now, you used to walk to school.
Yeah, that was about a quarter of a mile from where we used to live.
Yeah, and now, when did the school start?
8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yes, but I mean, what season?
Well, it would start after potatoes were dug, and would end like the last days of May.
So how long did you go to school in St. David?
Well, I went up to the 8th grade.
Yes, and how did you? You had to walk to school. You had no buses or anything like that.
Oh, yes, we had to walk to school.
And what were the roads like, Ernie?
Oh, they were all dirt roads. Fairly good, you know. I mean, any backs from the road today, that's a dirt road.
And
for years, they were just dirt roads, and then when they got to be more cars, you know. Well, they started to haul gravel in the road, like with horses, you know. And then they got trucks. And in fact, I remember my dad had bought a truck, a Ford truck, first truck we ever bought, Eva bought, was hauling a yard and a half. That was quite a truck, you know. Worked for the town. For the state. And then they got this, they started to get those state jobs, like building the road from Manawaska to Friendsville. I remember my dad had a truck, and when my brother Rosehair was hauling the gravel, you know, so much a yard for Sear and Susie, they were the contractor from Grand Island.
Now, what were the winter roads like?
The winter road, remember the old style plow? We had that for years. But before, let's say, can't remember the year when they started, I think it was 1931, that they started to keep the road open from Caribou to Holton, I think it was. That was with snowplow on trucks, like they have today, but smaller but similar. And then in those days, what they had here along the river was what they used to call a snow roller, big roller, you know, hauled by 3-4 teams of horses. And instead of plowing the snow with those old plow, they'd roll the snow. And they'd roll it enough that you could use a sled with a horse and would carry, you know. But that didn't prove very good. Not very long after that, that lasted for about, I would say about 10 years maybe. And they came in with the snowplow and started to keep the road open. And they had to use snow fence, a lot of it, because the road was kind of low, wasn't built high, and it would fill up with snow awful easy. When it was blowing, by using snow fence like they do today, they still do, not as much because they don't have to, Well, that would keep the blowing of snow in the road, and it have less trouble to keep the road open. In fact, one year, I don't know if I can remember the year, I think it was in 19, I can't remember the year, but I had worked for the town of Madawaska in the back roads with a Ford truck. Gagnon Road, Beaulieu Road, part of the Beaulieu Road, and Fournier Road. And,
can I intercept your friend there, Ernie? Why do they call it Beaulieu Road and Gagnon Road?
Well, actually, this is the name of those back roads.
Yeah, but why were they giving those family names?
Well, I used to, and a lot of people used to say Gagnon Road, because it was for a long time, a fellow by the name of Joe Gagnon had a sawmill and a grist mill along that road. There was a brook called the Gagnon Brook. And I believe this is where it got the name. And then that leads to the what they call the Grand Ruisseau Road. See? Comes back out to the Beaulieu Road that goes up the lake. See? And the reason Beaulieu Road was called Beaulieu Road is because Vital Beaulieu had a store and a farm right at the corner where the Beaulieu Road was starting up the lake, and I believe that's where it got its name, Beaulieu Road. That was a long time before I was born, I imagine, but and then Fournier Road is because it was on Laurent Fournier's farm, and they call it Fournier Road. See, it had to have name. Like you have today the Gagnon Road, you have the Beaulieu Road, you have the Fournier Road, and you have the Dufour Road here in the back, and you have the Chandreau Road.
What do you call the one in front here?
Pernier. That was Schmendiglise.
Schmendiglise.
Yeah.
Yes, well, Ernie, I want to ask you some more things about the homestead here. It's a historic area, and I'd like to know, have you tell us your version of the this cross that's been erected on the flat behind your house. Now, can you tell me when this cross was put up?
This cross, the first one that I remember, was put up same year I was confirmed. And I was 12 years old that year. I was born in 1910, so it had to be 1922.
Do you remember what the occasion was for the erection of the cross? Was there some type of a celebration at church?
There was a celebration.
Besides the confirmation, that is.
Besides the confirmation, because I remember they took that cross. There was a bunch of men that was carrying the cross, and we were walking behind them, all the priests and all the people involved, and walked down to that flat down there where they erected it. See? And I remember that very well.
Wasn't it the 50th anniversary of St. David Parish? I think that's what it was.
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah.
And do you remember the bishop that confirmed you, the name of the bishop?
No, I don't remember.
I think it's Walsh.
I know it was Father Martin.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But the bishop, I don't recall.
Do you remember some of the boys that were confirmed with you that year?
Oh my God, yes. It was William Sear. It was Patrick Sear.
Is that Patrick Amack?
Patrick Amack. And there was Emile Lachaine that used to live right here in this house at that time with the Peltiers. And there was Cyril Dufour. And there was Louis J. Sear.
Louis Adjean.
Louis Adjean. Oh my God, there was were quite a bunch. I can't remember them all now. There was Ned Sear in the back settlement. There was Albert Sear. There was Well,
quite a few. There's still quite a few of them around.
Yeah.
Ernie, we mentioned Patrick Amak and Louis Adjon. Can you tell us why they used to name people like that, give them their dad's name?
Well, in those days, I mean, they wouldn't say, well, Patrick Sear or Mac Sear. They'd say Mac Akoslo or Patrick Amak.
Why?
This was a, I don't know if they use it as a nickname or it was a, an habit of calling people, you know, they'd say, well...
Is it because there were a lot of Sear people?
There was a lot of Sear people.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some other people but Sear that would call the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And
Did they call your father Agnès Aramain?
Not here, but I believe that he was called Agnès Aramain when he was in Senegal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was too young to know.
Mm-hmm.
But here, well, they knew him by Ernest Chassé.
Mm-hmm.
And
they called you Ernie.
And they called me Ernie Agnès.
Ernie Agnès.
Yeah.
Now, I think I read somewhere along the way where there were so many same family names, and the names were repeated, that they had to give the name, like my father was Lawrence Zéphirin, you know? Yeah. Okay, now getting back to St. David Parish, can you tell me the year that the St. David Parish was started?
No, because when we came here, I was very young, and what I remember is this church where it is, but it wasn't finished at all, it was just the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the year when they had this, it was people from Montreal that finished the inside of the church. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember that very well.
Ernie, who gave the property for the church?
Well, that I don't know. I don't think it's Joseph Pelletier, mm-hmm. because I think it was somebody before him.
Who was
Michaud?
It?
Michaud.
Yes.
Probably a fellow by the name of Michaud.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's his widow that gave them the church property. This was in the original lot that you now own, is that right? That used to be the property of the first owners of this lot. Yeah. And I hear that you have continued giving land to the church.
Well, my dad, for once or twice, if I recall, gave a piece of land in the back of the cemetery to enlarge the cemetery. And since I've been here, I give them two different lots, too, see, that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
But who gave the land before? I think it's Philip the name of Michaud.
Ephraim Michaud.
Yeah.
Or Ephraim, or something like that. And I heard that the Madawaska Historical Society bought a piece of land from you this summer for their museum.
Yes, they did. Yeah, they bought it. They bought this piece of land right near the corner lot of the church there, toward the side of our house. It's a lot that's 125 by 125 frontage.
Yeah, but Ernie, you said it's right next to the church, but there was a brook separating the church property from your property.
Yeah,
wasn't?
But what we did, see, we built a culvert over the brook, part of it anyway, so that they could drive a car from the churchyard to the historical lot, see. And it's not completed, but this is the way the job was done so far.
Getting back to growing potatoes, Ernie, we've covered just about everything else except the handling of and loading of potatoes. Could you tell us something on that?
Well, I remember when I was young, I mean, helping my dad, that he was involved in loading potatoes for potato buyers around here, like George Gagnon and Philip Guimont and those fellows. And I used to do the work with him and with some other men, brothers. I remember we used to load what they call the red bliss, they used to raise them here. And at this time of the year, in February and March, we start loading those fish, and the bags that they used at the time were 150-pound bags.